Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape. And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect.
Ah, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers here in our Town Fair Tire studios for another couple of hours today as the regular season is underway and a lot to digest out of those first couple of games for the Bruins. We'll be joined along the way today by Billy Jaffe. He'll be in studio with us just after 9:30. We're going to talk with Bob Sweeney coming up at 10 o'clock today, tell you how you could win at least $125,000 on Monday. And we'll also talk with Joe Haggerty coming up the final half hour today as well. And, of course, along the way, your calls always welcome in at 617-779-0985. Morning, guys.
Morning.
Don't have to talk about baseball for a couple of hours, right?
No, not until tomorrow morning.
Not about relievers? You don't have to talk about relievers for a couple hours?
I, along with a lot of people, need a break from that already. After one game, it's already
That last night. I felt painful.
It's going to be a lot of Tums, a lot of Pepto-Bismol.
That's the beauty of postseason baseball. It's that slow torture. Every pitch changes the entire complexion of not only the at-bat, the inning, the game. Just watching a guy like Brandon Workman go at it as he's walking the tightrope to finally get out of the inning.
That was a hell of a pitch, too, that he got him out of that inning. But we digress because we're here to talk some hockey this morning. And a tale of two very, I mean, you couldn't have had two more different games than the Bruins have played so far. A 7-0 thrashing at the hands of Washington on Wednesday night. And then they come back and shut out the Buffalo Sabres on Thursday night. I guess we'll start with, I mean, what are your big takeaways out of, you know, two games in? Obviously, it's very early, but what are your big takeaways out of those first couple of games?
Well, I mean, I think that it was the first game was a lesson to everybody, not just the young guys, but everybody, what happens if you're not ready to play. For whatever reason, you know, they weren't ready. From the drop of the puck, it was, you know, missed coverages, some bad bounces, yeah, some bad goals that were allowed. It was one thing after another. The penalty kill, the forecheck was poor, the decision-making was bad, they were bad through the neutral zone, they were bad coverage in their own zone. I mean, it was just the entire night, and it snowballed, I get that, but it just, when you're not ready to play, whether it's mentally, whether it's physically, And I don't know why, because, I mean, you're anxious for the first game of the season.
Right.
You know you're playing the Stanley Cup champs. You know that they're raising the banner. You realize all that going in, and it just seemed like they weren't ready to go. Right? I mean, so, okay, quick turnaround. Let's get ourselves ready. What does it take to win a hockey game? And we saw all of that against the Sabres. And they played a very good game against the Sabres. There was some mistakes, but that's okay. That's going to happen. You're going to have mistakes throughout a game. But they played very well. They were committed. They were ready to play. They were committed. They did the little things that it takes to win a game, whether it's blocking shots, whether it's back-checking the back pressure, whether it's making sure the forecheck was on. Everything. Everything was good in that game for the most part. And It just serves as a lesson when you're not ready to play in this league. It doesn't matter who you're playing against, especially the Stanley Cup champs, a team that's playing with all kinds of confidence. You know, that's what's going to happen. You're going to get embarrassed. And they did. And their pride took over the next night. They figured it out, and they were ready to go.
The other takeaway for me is, fine, after you bring that requisite compete level, and they certainly did in Buffalo, how quickly can you reassemble your identity? The Bruins know exactly how they want to play. They understand how they have to defend and what the slot coverage has to look like. And as Bob alluded to, how hard the forwards have to come back and you have to work as five-man units. But I think in October, it's how quickly can you get back to that identity. And that'll be a big test, I think, for the Bruins and really for every team around the National Hockey League. And I think the other thing that comes to mind, Bruce Cassidy made some, I don't want to say significant changes, but he made some alterations to his lines because he inserted Anders Bjork, that there's going to be some organic change that we're going to see, whether it's due to injury or the way certain guys are playing, that the Bruins are going to go through here in October.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, that's the we talk about those things, and there's a lot that happened throughout, and I'm sure there were a lot of conversations. It was interesting going over the rink, you know, the morning before the Sabre, the game against Buffalo. You know, there's a few meetings going on, but I mean, it was just very matter of fact, very businesslike. You know, they were embarrassed. Mm-hmm. They were embarrassed in that game, and you know, that's just it's not the way that this has to be, or not the way that this is going to be. That was pretty much the message. And you say they know how to play. They know what they want to play. They know the style that they want to play. There's only one rookie there, and that's Donato. There are no other rookies on the team, right? So everybody has been there for at least a year. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. There's a couple of new faces in there, but there are no rookies. It's just Donato, and he got a taste of it last season. So, yeah, they do know how they want to play. But knowing what they want to do and making sure that they do it once they get out there, that's a completely different animal. And, you know, I think that third-line center is still going to evolve here. We're going to see if that, you know, stays where it is. Corrali had a very good game. A lot of guys had good games against Buffalo. Who's going to play alongside Krejci? You know, that's still going to that might be a revolving door for a little while to see who's the best fit. Maybe defensively they stick with the same pairs defensively, let them play through it. That was kind of the message to them, and they did. So we'll see. I still think that there's a lot of questions still to be answered.
See, to me, what was jarring about the Washington game, and again, the next night totally different, but it was the total lack of winning battles. I mean, they got beat just, you know, purely effort-wise. If you took away the scoreboard, you know, and the scoring chances were, you know, unbelievably tilted in one direction in that game as well. But it was just, like, it felt like every loose puck, every battle along the wall, like, they were just getting outworked.
You're going to have games like that during the season?
Expect it to be the first
exactly,
one, though.
Exactly.
Right?
You're going to have games like that during the year where nothing goes right. You just don't have it. You know, for whatever reason, you just don't have it. But you do not expect it to be on national TV for the first game of the season. that was the most jarring thing.
So I have to ask, because of, you know, what this team did during the course of the preseason, does the China trip have anything to do with it? Does the fractured training camp have anything to do with it? That they just looked like on night one, they're not on the same page.
My feeling with that whole thing is, could China have contributed? Yes. But I think that there are some fundamental issues with this team that are bigger than just the China trip. I think I had mentioned, you know, and Bob and I had talked about this, I tweeted it out. So the LA Kings, who probably brought a bigger contingent of their regular roster, they made this trip last year. They made it later than the Boston Bruins. They played in Shanghai and they played in Beijing. They were 6-0 to start the season. They were 9-2 to end October, and they had a first-year head coach in John Stevens. Yes, he was familiar with everybody because he had been the assistant, but that was his first year as the new guy. I just think that when it comes to the Boston Bruins, that there are some bigger issues, and Bob kind of detailed some of that. You had, let's just go through it, on your top line, Patrice Bergeron didn't play a single preseason game. As good as he is, that's going to come out at some point during October. Second line, who is going to be your right wing along with David Krejci? Third line, can Sean Corrali be the guy? And what's that combination going to look like? Fourth line on opening night had Noel Acciari in the middle and a completely different threesome. Let's move back to the back end. You've got no Torrey Krug. You've got Brandon Carlo coming off an injury. Yes, he played during the exhibition season. What are Chara and McAvoy going to be like heading into year two? So you had a number of fundamental issues that I think that you had to work through that were bigger than just the China trip.
But could you argue that some of those might have been helped by having a full team together for a few weeks?
Maybe, but Bergeron was hurt. Krug was hurt.
Krug goes out in the last preseason game. There's nothing you can do about that.
Again, you know, could China have contributed to this? Maybe. But again, I just think that there are bigger issues, and you have such a small training camp to work with. I think people want to point out they had two practices that were squashed because of the issues over there. That wasn't true either. They only had one that was at issue there. So it's, yes, I do think that China may have played a role. Maybe it exacerbated some of the issues that the Bruins had. But I think that there are bigger fundamental issues that the team had to be able to work through during the course of the season or during the course of the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, it only because we talked about it at times during the preseason about the impact that this is going to have. And then you watch that opening night performance and you go, this looks like a team that is, you know, that's meeting each other for the first time.
Well, that was the first time that entire group had played together. And part of that was not just China, but because of the injuries. Mm-hmm. Remember, you also had some injuries that you experienced in the preseason once you got back from China. So that's another thing to put into the mix. But I remember having a conversation with John Moore maybe 5-6 days before the season began. Let's get started. Let's go. They played 8 games in the preseason. And personally, I think that's too long. I think that's too many. Forget about the China trip. I think every team in the National Hockey League, it should be like the NFL. 4 games. First 2, you see your kids. 3rd game, you play your lineup. 4th, guys in the bubble get a chance to play. Maybe take a little bit of a quick look at what your lineup might look like on opening night, and then you're done. Let's start the season. Guys are ready to go once training camp begins.
Well, there's no doubt. Guys come into, I mean, you have to come into shape, into camp in shape.
This isn't the 60s or the 70s.
Exactly.
When guys were working second jobs, and then they had to use training camp to get themselves back into shape.
You know, put the cigarette butt down and hop over the boards, you know, things like that.
I know some Hall of Fame players that did that.
617-779-0985. As we get started there, we'll get into more on the Buffalo game, some of what we've seen here over the course of the first couple of games of this Bruins season as we get started on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The number here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you until 11 o'clock. Breaking down the first couple of games of the season. 7-0 loss on Wednesday night, 4-0 win on Thursday night. And the Bruins with the weekend off to get ready for the home opener coming up on Monday afternoon. You can take your thoughts on everything that we've seen so far. Obviously, one of the big topics of discussion coming out of those couple of games is, as it was going in to this season, after the acquisition of Halak, was, well, what's the goaltending going to look like? 14 saves on 19 shots for Tuukka in 27 minutes and change in game one, and he gets lifted. Halak finishes the game as was previously planned. Halak gets the start against Buffalo. I almost thought they might change that up after they had to lift Rask in game one. Bob Beers is shaking his head no.
Tuukka wasn't good in game one. No question. Probably 3 of the goals, right? First one was a bit of a fluke. The first bad goal was a bit of a fluke. He didn't have a chance on Oshie's. I'm talking about the one that bounced over his stick and bounced over Chara's
stick. Right off the face-off right game.
So that was Kuznetsov's goal. That's kind of a fluky goal. When I interviewed Bruce Cassidy, before the Buffalo game, he said, I still don't know how that one went in. How that got to his stick and bounced past ours. But, he made some good saves in the first. Second period, bad backhand goal from the slot. Terrible goal by Kuznetsov coming down the left wing. But so my whole point is always, okay, how did they get the chance, right? And yes, it was a bad goal. His job's to stop the puck. It was a bad goal. Shouldn't have gone in. But how did they get the chance? I mean, Kuznetsov flying down the left wing, that was just way too easy entering the zone. Should not have gone in. But where's the resistance coming into the zone on the penalty kill? How is a guy getting a backhand from the slot? How many chances did they get from the slot that game?
Right.
So
guys standing in front of the net untouched, things like
that. The whole team deserved to hit the reset button the next day, and they did. Tuukka hasn't had that chance yet. That's Monday. That's my point. And he deserves to get the reset button as well. Now, if it becomes a pattern, that's a whole different story. It was one game. All right, let's see where we're at. Halak played very well against the Sabres. Didn't get tested a lot in the first couple of periods, I don't think. I mean, he did at times. Made a really good save in the first period on Rodriguez. Not a lot, though. Not a lot. And then the third period played very well when the Bruins kind of maybe guilty of sitting back a little bit. So did his job. Played a good game, but he had a much better team in front of him as well. Tuukka deserves that chance. And like I said, if it becomes a pattern, no question, now we start talking about it.
Well, and again, I don't even look at it as, you blow the whole thing up and Halak's the starter or anything like that, as some people might. But I almost thought, you talked about pressing the reset button. I almost thought they might have done that with Tuukka, too, on Thursday night. Said, plan was this.
They mapped it out. Tuukka will play Monday, I believe. That was and Halak's going to play one of the games later in the week, whether it's Thursday or Saturday. I don't know if it was announced yet or not, but he'll play one of those two games on the homestand.
Should we, not based on this, but should we expect Halak to get maybe more than Khudobin?
Well, Bruce Dick, Cassidy right? already. I don't know if you can necessarily say, Ryan, not to cut you off. I don't think that that would be any surprise. Bruce Cassidy basically telegraphed that. He told you that during the exhibition season, that the plan that they map out and how many games and who knows exactly what it's going to be for Tuukka somewhere in the mid-50s, mid-to-high 50s. I think a lot of that will depend on how both goaltenders play. But they told Yaroslav Halak, just because we're setting this plan and maybe we have you targeted for anywhere from 25 to 28 starts, you could get more. That will be based on the way that you're playing and the way that Rask is playing.
Yeah,
but he already told you that.
They didn't have Khudobin slated to play four games in a row in November with Rask healthy.
Sure.
Right, I mean,
but even with that, the plan was
last November.
The plan going into the season we knew was for Rask to finish with right around where he finished with as far as starts go last year. My question would be, do they go in this year saying the plan is for Halak to start 30? Does it is it
play will dictate it?
Yeah.
I mean, play will dictate it. Play by both of them will dictate it, where they are in the standings, what the situation is later in the season. So many things can happen between now and then. The health of both goaltenders. I mean, there's so many variables between, in the next 80 games that will determine that number. I mean, you go in with the best laid plans, right? But a lot of things change as you go along, and they might have to, call an audible along the way. So they had remarkable health by both goaltenders last year. I know Tuukka battled a little something during the season, which he has in the past as well, but nothing that really kept him out for any length of time. They had health by both goaltenders. That's rare in a season where both those goaltenders went through the entire year. If you correct me if I'm wrong, I think
they had to lean on Anton Khudobin a little bit early in the season. I remember Anders Bjork inadvertently ran over Tuukka in practice, and Tuukka was dealing with a concussion, that caused him to miss a few games. But the other thing that I want to point out is, if you look across the NHL, the Bruins are not unique to this situation. There are a lot of teams that are going with a similar plan for their goaltenders to start the season. On opening night, when you saw that Jonas Korpisalo got the start instead of Sergei Bobrovsky in Columbus, they had a back-to-back game, if memory serves. And that's the plan that John Tortorella wanted to go with.
Yeah, they lost last night, too, with Bobrovsky in the net.
That's it. Korpisalo got the win. But that's what he ended up sticking with. But normally, I think you would see that number one guy getting the start. That's actually somewhat unique. Normally, your number one guy would get that start, and then it would be your backup at home that would get the second one.
617-779-0985, our number if you want to hop aboard with us here on the Hockey Show. Changes, you mentioned Anders Bjork gets entered into the lineup in game two. Obviously, there was some shuffling in there by Bruce Cassidy going from game one to game two. I expect that we're going to see a lot of that, especially in the early part of the season, because of some of those questions that you mentioned earlier, Judd, about, you know, who is the third line center? It, like, none of that got set in stone during this preseason. And so, you know, we were still asking questions last weekend about, you know, is Pasternak going to stay with the Bergeron line, or is he going to drop down with Krejci? What did you think of some of the changes that they made here from game one to game two?
Well, I didn't mind them. I you know, that one of the more interesting ones was Backes played on the fourth line. You know, caught that with Achari in the middle and Nordstrom on the left. So I thought that was interesting there. He played power. There weren't a lot of special teams. There weren't a lot of power plays, but he was on one of the power play units, the Krejci unit, for the time that they were out there. I liked, you know, Donato getting an opportunity up with Krejci. You know, Heinen wasn't all that effective in game one. Nobody was in that game, but he wasn't all that effective there in game one. So try somebody else, you know, try a little fresh approach. Getting Bjork back in there was I thought he would go down to Providence and play, and he still might, who knows, but, you know, he looked pretty good in that game. He used his feet, you know, he got the places, you know, their forecheck was so much better as a team, as a unit, you know, he was part of that. So, and that was a very young line, right? Him, Heinen, and Corrali, all second year players playing together. You know, Heinen on the left and Bjork was on the right and Corrali in the middle. So that third line, I think, is going to be evolving all season, you know, or at least early part of the season until they find a good fit.
And then based on situations, if you look at some of the ice time, so Anders Bjork, I think, had the least amount of ice time. And as Bob pointed out, but which was still, great, was that you played him 11 and a half minutes, which was terrific. But Bruce Cassidy, depending on what the matchup is, where the faceoff is, he can sort of juggle some of his wings. You know, he can take Bjork off that line. He can put Backes on it. Similarly, I think you saw in certain instances, maybe a different centerman would take a draw depending on where it is. You know, and that's adept coaching, that you're not just locked in to what the combination is. I'm not changing it. I'm just going to go with my matchup. That you have to have somewhat of a fluid mindset during the course of the game to get yourself a win.
Yeah, he's big too on, you know, where the faceoff is, and that will determine sometimes the line that comes out. You know, they tried to give Bergeron more offensive zone faceoffs last year, so, you know, you get a little opportunity to win a draw, you get puck possession, you get an opportunity to, you know, you get a chance on goal. And Corrali had a lot of defensive zone faceoffs last year. They didn't mind playing that fourth line against other teams' top lines. So, you know, where the faceoff is sometimes determines which line's out there, or the other line that's out, you know, if when you're on home ice, you know, depending on what line, you know, the opposition brings out, where the faceoff is, you know, who was just out there. There's a lot of things that play into it. And he's got some versatility amongst the forwards where he can do that now.
And with those bottom two lines in particular, obviously you
but still a lot of questions, Jed.
Absolutely.
I'm not crazy about Achari in the middle. I'm not crazy about that. I mean, he was much better. You know, it's like
everybody was much better against Buffalo. Yeah.
He was better in that game. I guess I need to see a little bit more of it. I like him on the wing. I like Corrali center in that fourth line, you know, where they had it last year, and you can really have confidence in that line a lot. I'm not there yet. So, you know,
and it wouldn't shock me if they end up going back to that at some point, just because, right? You know, I can see a lot of tinkering and experimenting early and then say, well, we know this part of it works, so maybe we go back to
that. There are so many unknowns. What's going to happen, the way those two centermen on your bottom two lines play here in the first month and a half? What happens down in Providence? All of a sudden, maybe JFK starts to light it up and Jacob Forsback at Carlson ultimately wins an opportunity to get another look here in Boston. You have so many things that are going to happen here over the next month that are going to change. And that'll be interesting a month from now, what kind of conversations we're having. But the other thing that I'm thinking about with those bottom two lines, for most coaches, yeah, you want them to be able to contribute offensively, but they have to be, especially the way the Bruins play, they have to be reliable defensively, trustworthy, consistent. And that's what you're looking for right off the hop. And I think if Bruce Cassidy can get that, it will grant him a lot more flexibility.
Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's a tale of two completely different teams that both the Bruins were and then who they played, too. That was the other thing. You know, I mean, Washington isn't Buffalo. Buffalo sure as heck isn't Washington. you know, I go back to last year. I know, Judd, you brought up the LA Kings, their start after China. Okay, great. Then they sucked for a while after. They went on that run, and then they sucked. So my point is,
the
Bruins weren't good, and then the Bruins got, you know, early on, and then they got good. The whole China thing, I think, played a factor in it. I think everything else that you laid out played into it, too. But last year, Chicago Blackhawks won 10-1 opening night over the Pittsburgh Penguins. And you know, Pittsburgh wasn't great last. They weren't Cup champions, but they were a hell of a lot better than the Hawks, who weren't 10-1 winners. You know what I mean? The Hawks aren't a good team right now. My point is, Bob said it too. You guys all said bad games are going to happen. They looked awful. It was painful. I can only imagine doing the game. That's one of those hard.
We're talking about Buffalo half.
There you go. Right. Yes. And the fine cuisine and beverages there, I'm sure. You know, look, it's one of those things that. The good news is they said, okay, we got our asses kicked and we know that we need to be better. The bad news is there are some deficiencies with the team. I think we all knew that going into the season. I don't think anybody in this room didn't realize that. And then they helped rectify certain things. I love the moves, subtle moves that the coaches made for the second game on Thursday night, putting Bjork in, get in, mix things up, and there'll be more changes too. So, okay, first two games. I don't read too much into it. I didn't get near any cliff whatsoever. First games aren't always. I mean, the San Jose Sharks are supposed to be Cup favorites. They go out and get thumped at home, what was it, 5-2, 5-1 or something opening night to Anaheim. Then they come back a few nights later and they win. They win last night in L.A. First nights are first nights.
Well, yeah. I mean, and look, again, there were, as you said, and we've been talking about, there were a lot of questions coming into the season. It's going to take a while to answer those questions. But ultimately, you know, I guess, you know, the biggest question that I had is, how much different is this team really from what finished the year last year? And, you know, there are some differences, certainly, but most of the major pieces of that team are back. Yeah, are no still question. Here.
But, I know we don't play the game on paper. On paper, I think they're better just from their second years from any of their young players. But does that mean they're going, you know, on paper, they should be better because of the experience factor. Are they? That, you know, we'll know. We always say this every year, 20 games in, then let's get a real a visual of this team.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the other things going on around the league. Since we saw Washington the other night, Tom Wilson gets a 20-game suspension from the league.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's a repeat offender.
Four suspensions, right? In 13 months, I think it is?
Yeah. Something like 107 games.
Yeah. He was fortunate to not get another one, too, in the playoffs last year.
Yeah. The hit when...
broke his jaw.
Yeah.
Zach Aston-Reese. Yeah, he got three, I think.
That was close.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this obviously is a major statement by the league. Anytime you're talking about something like this, you know, they finally step up and say, all right, enough's enough with this guy.
And that's a big thing of it. And he's appealed it already. He had 48 hours to appeal. The players' union did. I got to bring this up with Bob, being a former NHLer. So they're more supportive of Tom Wilson not having 20 games than they are about Sundquist's head. You know what I mean? I mean, getting hit. So
they're in a no-win.
I know they're in a no-win situation. I get it. But, I mean, eventually a parent's got to say to their kid, I've threatened to punish you a few times. You know, predatory.
But if a player is going to appeal and go through the association, they have to have his back there. It's just, they have to. I mean,
I get it. I understand. But if it was one time or something, maybe twice, I get it.
Hey,
after a while.
We played a clip of him, Billy. We played a clip that. Of Tom Wilson a month ago. We played the clip the other night. Howie Sylvester, our producer, had it. But it was from a month ago talking about how he needs to change.
I know.
So it's not like he doesn't know. You know, he still wants to be physical. He still wants to do that. But he has to change. He has to
be
more
curious.
And now this.
I'd love to sit in a room. Let's say we had 20 NHLers sitting in the room. And we asked them if it was a private sampling, and we said, look, your answers won't be repeated anywhere. How many of you want to raise your hand to support Tom Wilson getting less than 20 games? I wonder how many guys would, because that he seeks out,
not many, but that ask him if you want him on their team.
I understand.
That's a different question.
Well,
the majority of them would say yes.
Well, I think the other thing inherent with that suspension is the league needed to get his attention. They needed this, you know, I wonder, you
Does
know,
it
that's
get
the
his
other
attention?
Thing I would have loved
Does it
to
get
have been
reduced?
In the room.
Does it get reduced? If he's appealing it, do you think it gets reduced?
Doesn't it go to the commissioner?
The commissioner goes next? I believe. Yeah.
He reduced.
This is his seventh time.
Who had the 25-game suspension?
Dennis Weidman.
No. That was the other one.
He reduced two of them.
He got reduced to 10. But who had the 25 and he reduced it to 21?
Carcillo. Wasn't
I'll think of it. It wasn't him, though.
I believe this is his seventh time that Bettman's hearing a suspension appeal.
Rafi Torres.
Was it Torres, not Carcillo? Did I mix? Okay. Two beautiful guys, you know, that I mixed up there. Players. Judd, I think that, does this get his attention? I understand the 1 point. I don't know. You played a clip a month ago. You're shaking your head. Yes. I'm not convinced it does. He still has 29.7 million coming in, I think it is, guaranteed over this contract. Yes, he loses 1.2. I don't know if this gets his attention.
But that's the real issue. You know, and I think at some point he had been basically, literally running roughshod over the National Hockey League based on what he had done. You know, I think when it comes to suspensions in the playoffs, they're supposed to mean more because it could cost your team a chance at a title. They give him a suspension last year for the hit that he registered against the Penguins, but the Capitals advance. They move on. Tom Wilson was excellent in the playoffs. They win a Stanley Cup. But I think the idea is this going to get his attention?
I'm not convinced it does.
I think, well, that, you know, we're going to have to see when Tom Wilson steps on the ice and what it's like a couple of months from now after 20 games go by. But after seeing his bank account and the 20-game suspension and what kind of support, you know, at some point, if you're Brian McClellan and the team, now granted, you have to support your player and you have his back. But at some point, what does this do for you going forward and your team this season?
If I had enough money to bet, I'd say I don't think it gets reduced. I've tried to talk. People don't have a feel for it. They just don't. They don't know where they think Gary Bettman's going to go with it. I'm going to say no, that because of the amount of suspensions in the short period of time and the viciousness of the hit, I'm going to say no. They do want to send a message. Whether it gets through, we'll wait and see.
Much like I think that, you know, when it comes to playoffs and the regular season, the suspensions are obviously different because of the gravity of the game. I think typically early in the season, you'll see those things stand more often than maybe later when the games have greater
weight. Find out soon. Yeah, a few days.
But, you know, and obviously we're talking about two very different types of players, but, you know, for a Bruins fan, you can almost relate it to a guy like Marchand, who gets suspended for doing kind of the same stupid stuff over and
repetitive.
Over and over again.
Yeah.
And every time it happens, he says, you know, I understand I have to change, but, you know, then a year or two down the road, you see him do it again.
It's the term repeat offender.
Right. I mean, there's some of these players, it's just kind of ingrained in the way they play. And Tom Wilson may consciously in his head say, all right, I've got to cut this out because I don't want to be suspended for 40 games the next time. But once he gets into the heat of battle and he's got a guy coming across the middle with his head down, is he going to be able to lay off of that hit?
And does he lose effectiveness because he does? I mean, it's his job. That's why he's so effective. He's a big, strong guy, can finish hits, and he finishes them with authority.
Yeah.
And when you hit as much as he does and you're going at the speed that he does, sometimes it's going to happen.
And that key thing you
and
said,
if he pulls back,
yeah.
Now is he going to be as effective?
Not. You're right. Not nearly as effective for what got him to the NHL.
He's got to figure out how to do it without you know, targeting heads and everything else. He's got to get lower. He's got to do something fundamentally to change how he hits. You know, but he delivers a lot of clean hits too.
And he does, and he comes at it with
speed. It changes the game because he's got a lot of speed.
He hits. He skates better than most guys. Let's just go back a decade ago.
People need to know when he's on the ice.
Yeah,
players need to know when he's on the ice, and they do. Trust
me.
Is
he entering Matt Cook territory?
Yeah.
Okay. Matt Cook,
it's a very similar hit.
Matt Cook.
That Cook threw on Savard.
Yeah, Matt Cook was.
Savard was a little more stationary in this. What's the kid's name that got hit by?
Oscar Sundquist.
Sundquist was. He was a righty coming across the middle, and he was just letting the shot go. So he was actually still moving. Where Savard kind of turned and shot. He was a lefty in the same area, but he had kind of almost stopped to take that shot.
So why is
that's more of an impact.
Matt Cook absolutely vilified. Matt Cook was looked upon, was frowned upon. He was for a couple of years said to be, oh, he's that
player. He took out heads, he took out knees, he took out, you know, he was just.
Yeah. But Tom Wilson, if he's getting into that category, doesn't seem to have that same vilification. Is that a word? Is that same?
I'll allow it.
He doesn't seem to have that yet. Maybe because he hasn't. I don't know. I don't know why. Maybe because he didn't end somebody's career yet. Maybe that's why.
Billy Jaffe joining us in studio. We will continue with him coming up here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stick around.
This is where Boston talks hockey. Hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, the Sports Hub. The Bruins. The NHL. This is the show that's all hockey.
He scores!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Zarat, Bob Beers, joined in studio as well by Billy Jaffe. Did I hear correctly? You guys broadcasting from the street on Monday?
Yes, they're kicking us to the street.
so are we.
They're not alone, yeah. Yeah. We'll be out there at noon.
Yeah, Dale Arnold will be on the street at noon, the one pregame. Different segments, and I'll be inside along with Barry, and then post game I'm going to be outside drinking beers.
Excellent.
Yes, it's Tap's going to be right there.
Go and drink beers with Billy after the game.
Yes, they're going to bring some players and I think a coach out, and they're doing a big post game thing out there too for it.
There's a whole fan fest going on.
On
Monday.
I hope the weather's good on Monday.
And you guys are going to be at Hurricane O'Reilly's. Did I see that properly or?
Yeah, we're on, I think so. I don't know if we're inside or outside, but right, either in front or in Hurricane O'Reilly's.
Excellent.
Not a bad spot.
Pregame show, we got an hour pregame show.
Yeah, so noon. Pregame, 1 o'clock face.
Monday, 59 and cloudy, it's saying, for a high.
Perfect.
That's hockey weather.
Good. Yeah, it's not bad.
Not bad.
NHL expansion.
Yeah.
Is full speed ahead, it looks like, to Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle Baristas, the Seattle Rain Clouds, whatever they're going to be called. Seattle's in. It's not official, but it's official.
Right. It's
happening. It's done.
They're,
and it
they're
should.
Going forward with
and
it.
And it should. It should. 32nd team. They're going to do a $700 million renovation to the key, I think it's called Key Center now. It's going to basically be a new building. That's what it is. It's how they figured it out. Now, they're talking 2 years. I don't see 2020, 2021, most likely the time for it to happen. You know, we don't have time to get into the whole, well, this could be a lockout scenario or a work stoppage. Who knows if it's a lockout or a strike or whatever, but it could happen. I think the NHL is absolutely imbecilic if both the players and the league go to a lockout or a work stoppage.
How much are they getting for Seattle?
$650.
How much did they get for Vegas?
$500. How about is that inflation? Is that inflation? Or what?
Oh, by the way, that's not counted as revenue.
No, that's not HRR.
That goes right to the owner.
Right. That's not owner revenue.
It does not. There's no 50-50 split with the players on that one.
Right, and that's why exactly. That's
goes
a big,
right to the owners.
And so they're going to be making their $650 million. And if I read correctly, Vegas doesn't share in that expansion.
Because they just came in.
Yeah. They don't show. So it's 650 divided by
30.
Divided by 30.
Yeah,
that's not bad. You didn't think that price $150 million higher because of Vegas's run last year?
Absolutely.
They look at it and go, "Look, you can compete right away if you do it right."
Absolutely, that had a big time hand in it. Seattle's going to be a great market. It's obviously got natural rivalry with Vancouver, 2 hours away. Depending how long it takes you at the border, I think it makes sense. It's a passionate sports market. You've seen what they've done with the Seahawks. You see their soccer team there draws great crowds. They can't wait for this to happen, and it balances things out at 32 at 16 per conference. So
got to put the right management people in there.
Yeah,
sorry to cut you off, but I think when it comes to Bill Foley and the group that's out in Vegas, the management group did it properly. And I think if the group in Seattle does the same thing, then I have no doubt that it'll be a success.
Before you have to go, we're not hearing a lot of it because, you know, we're kind of a lot of things going on here in Boston. But up in Toronto, two big things, right? Tavares playing with the Leafs.
Yep.
But the other one now is William Nylander, still unsigned.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a star player, young kid, second contract. He's holding out for, the rumors are he wants $8 million
$7 to $8
year.
Million.
Where is it, and what do they do with them?
Right now, it's nowhere.
They're going to sign Marner and Matthews.
Right, in this coming season, yeah. or this coming yeah. Offseason. It's nowhere. He talked to a Swedish reporter the other day and said, I'm paraphrasing, I'm looking out. I have to look out for myself. I am. I'm looking. I love my team, but I'm looking out for myself. We know that the agents play a hand in this as well. Is he worth $7 to $8 million? It's a rhetorical question. I'll throw it out. Is he better than David Pastrnak? Is he? And David's making what, 6 point whatever? No, I don't think he is. But if he can get it, he's going to want to get it. No doubt about it. Every day that he's out, as far as I'm concerned, he gets more leverage. Every day, the Leafs said that we don't have a salary cap problem. That's hogwash. They've got a salary cap problem there.
They don't right now. Like, they're one of the lowest paying teams in the league, but they are,
going to. And they don't still have overall great defense. The most logical thing that happened, to my opinion, is they trade him. He gets what he wants, between $7 and $8 million somewhere else, and they trade him and they try and get a defenseman back for him.
And then that's going to blow things up for every other player that's a good player looking for a second contract.
Well, let's go backward, though. But that was the conversation for the last couple of seasons, the narrative in Toronto. Mm-hmm. We got to trade one of these guys. We're going to be in trouble. Yeah. We need some help on defense. And now they've waited, and here we are.
Kyle Dubas, their new GM, the boy wonder up there, said, we're not going to have a salary cap problem up here. We're going to sign everybody. This was earlier. And, you know, I know that that's bravado. I understand what you're, you know, but on the other hand, got to be realistic. I think the realistic attitude was, we may have to trade somebody when it's all said. We're that good. We're that good, folks, that everybody's going to want their money. It's nowhere right now. This is one of those
trade
things.
Trade that one to get a defenseman that's, spend that money, not maybe $7 or $8, but somewhere a little bit
five.
Under that to make sure that they get
or have a guy under contract, yeah.
Unless they've got guys in the system.
Minnesota could use a trade. Minnesota's they're a vanilla team to me. Maybe not even vanilla, maybe plain yogurt. They got a couple of defensemen. Could they use a forward? Yeah, they could. To me, that's a logical trade-type partner. Paul Fenton is in charge there now. Maybe he could do something. Again, I don't know their cap situation, but my point, it's going nowhere. Bobby, where is it at right now? As far as everybody I've talked with, it's hanging right now.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the possibility of a work stoppage in a few years. Second contracts, you know, kind of the way that the rookie contracts got into it, you know, years ago, like those second contracts and the size of them might end up being one of those sticking points that they look at.
Then this is another mechanism that the GMs are going to need to protect the owners and GMs are going to need to have put in to protect themselves, because they're the ones that did this in the sense of the second contracts. They said, well, if we can get ahead of the game, we're going to do this, meaning give these bigger contracts, but not too big. Now they've exploded.
All right, Billy Jaffe, you can see him as part of the hour-long Nesson broadcast on Monday afternoon.
Free and post, yep.
All right, look forward to that.
Gentlemen, be well.
We'll talk with Bob Sweeney and tell you how you could win up to at least $125,000 on Monday. We'll get to that next, right after the Sports Hub headlines. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show, Hour 2. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you. We can get to more of your calls coming up in this half hour on the first couple of Bruins games of the season. But coming up on Monday, the Bruins play their home opener against the Ottawa Senators. And whether you're at the game or not, you can take part in the largest 50-50 jackpot ever. $250,000 minimum in the pot, with the winner guaranteed to get at least $125,000. We are joined by Bob Sweeney now, the executive director of the Bruins Foundation, joins us on the hotline. Good morning, Bob.
How we doing, guys?
Swoop.
Morning.
We are, you know, this is a has become a big thing. We saw this, you know, tail end of last year. You guys got the ability to start selling these tickets online. I know I've taken part in a number of these. I've already got my tickets for Monday. This has turned into a great opportunity to do some great work for the Bruins Foundation. And this latest one, taking the Special Olympics Massachusetts and guaranteeing them at least $125,000. That is awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, the ability to, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys, and welcome to another hockey season. you know, the ability to have people purchase tickets prior to the game really is, I think, the new wave, and a lot of the teams are doing it. You know, we watch what other teams are doing. They watch what we were doing. I saw in Vancouver in the preseason, now they're doing it online. Not that they need any help. They're one of the highest generating teams for 50-50 in the league. But we've really saw a spike last year, unfortunately, with a couple of tragedies, the Humboldt and Officer Gannon. So the Humboldt one last year raised $211,000, and you know, with going on radio and TV and promoting it socially, it really helps out. And we have a partnership recently with Special Olympics that I'm very excited about. We donated $1 million in total over the next 3 years to help all the Olympians, and it's a great fit. And not only are we going to write a check for that amount, but we're also integrating them in to the whole Bruins culture, and you'll see that firsthand for everybody that's watching and at the game on Monday. They'll form a fan tunnel when the players come out, and we're going to have a couple Olympians drop the puck. So it's a real good partnership. We're looking forward to it. And with this kickoff, you know, we've been promoting it the last few days because this is the first home game. And hopefully we can generate a lot of funds, and hopefully someone goes home a very happy individual.
Well, and as you said, you know, you don't even have to be at the game, which is key. So,
right.
You know, you might already be home and you find out that you're $125,000 richer.
Yeah, you just have to go to bostonbruins.com/50-50 and sign up to enter to win, and you can sign up as many times as you want. And I think that's, you know, we want to spread the word to as many people, and I know the people of Special Olympics are excited about it. We're excited about it. Our 50-50 partner is excited about it, and like I said, it's a unique opportunity, and hopefully it will have our biggest pot ever. I know we will.
So give us a little history of the foundation, what you guys have done here over the years, especially since you took over, and just the different place, different people that you've helped, and how much money you've raised.
Yeah, well, thanks, Beersy. This is the 15th year of the foundation. I've been involved 12, believe it or not. Time flies, but you know, we've really grown in revenues. I mean, we went from $600,000 in revenues when I first started to just over $5 million last year. To date, we've raised over $30 million. And, you know, we support all children's charities throughout New England, whether it's through health, education, community outreach, academics, athletics. And we went through an audit last year, and basically they really told us we should focus on health and wellness and education, and try to, you know, partner up with some groups that can really help enhance your brand and do good work in the community. And the more and more we looked at it, we really wanted to do something with an organization like Special Olympics, because they're really focusing on the health of their athletes. And you know, it's a historical year for Special Olympics. It's the 50th year of Special Olympics. It started in Chicago, and with that being said, we're going to take 12 athletes, floor hockey players, to Chicago for the Winter Classic, and we'll have a floor hockey game against Chicago's version of their floor hockey team prior to the Winter Classic. So it should be a great experience. It's been a great run, and we're always looking for, you know, different ways to raise funds, and this new opportunity with online fundraising, it really is beneficial to not only our foundations but other foundations throughout the league.
Swoop, you mentioned the game that you're going to have against some Special Olympians in Chicago, but across this season and maybe what you're looking forward to next season and the years beyond, because as you mentioned, the foundation has formed this partnership with Special Olympics. What else are you sort of kicking around, and what else can we start to look forward to seeing between the foundation, the Boston Bruins, and Special Olympics this season and beyond?
Well, like I said, Judd, earlier, you'll notice it right away for the home opener. You know, everything will be branded Special Olympians, and we'll have it. Two of them drop the puck, but also we'll highlight athletes throughout the year in different sports. I think everybody was at the golf tournament that saw Tyler hit that tee shot to kind of signify the relationship, was very impressed with him. They're just great athletes, and the passion and commitment that they have to their crafts is just like hockey players, baseball players, basketball players. And, you know, different events, you know, we're going to have our face-off gala again, and the Special Olympians will be involved in that at the end of October. So everything we do, not every single thing, but the majority of things we do this year will focus on Special Olympics.
Bob Sweeney, Executive Director of the Boston Bruins Foundation, joining us. Give people information again on how they get the info and how they get their tickets for Monday's drawing.
Everybody, they can just go to bostonbruins.com/50/50 and enter to win. You can buy as little or as much as you want and enter as many times as you want. And like I said, it'll be an exciting time. You know, we're going to have a fan fest, you know, prior to the game, and, you know, we'll be walking around there with our machines to purchase prior to the game. But like I said, the best part is that our fans, whether you're at the game or not, you can be sitting in your recliner watching and purchase tickets or purchase them right now this morning.
All right, we'll let you go on that. Appreciate you joining us for a few minutes, and look forward to talking to you again down the road as you guys continue what's been a very profitable partnership for a number of different organizations. Thanks very much, Bob.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Boop.
See ya.
All right, so again, bostonbruins.com/50/50. You can go on and purchase your tickets. They will be sold through the end of the second intermission on Monday, so you've got a little bit of time there, but the prize pool is guaranteed to be $250,000. Could go even higher than that. The winner will take home half of that, and the other half going to Special Olympics Massachusetts, which is obviously
just
a
terrific
cause.
Just asking for a friend, are we eligible? The broadcaster's eligible?
I bought mine. So whether we are or not, they've already got my money.
No, I'm in.
So yeah, hey, why not? We don't work officially for them, right? You work for the radio station.
I do.
Yeah. All right. We will continue here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We'll get back into some of what happened on the ice this week. 617-779-0985. Stick around.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirois, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Right. 98.5 The Sports Hub. And the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning, every Saturday morning from 9 until 11, all season long. Bruins, with an ugly one on Wednesday night, came back and much better performance, obviously, on Thursday with the win over Buffalo. We can talk about either one of those games or the season as a whole. Let's go to Rusty in Woburn's been hanging on. What's going on, Rusty?
Hey, Ryan, nice to see you. Hey, guys, listen, I'm going to put my disclaimer out there first. I'm a 12-year season ticket holder to the Bruins. I'm a huge fan of hockey, and I'm a Flyers fan. And I just have to say this. I don't like that piece of excremental garbage that wears the number 63. He should have been thrown out of the game on Wednesday night. It's insane what these people put up with. You know what? He could score 1,000 goals. I don't care. All I can say is on Thursday night, October 25th, I hope Wayne Simmons takes care of it.
All right. Thanks, Rusty. I've talked to Rusty about this before. I'm not really sure why you would be a Bruins season ticket holder if you are a Flyers fan and hate Brad Marchand, but to each his own.
He's a hockey fan.
He's a hockey fan, absolutely. Just, I guess you go and root against the Bruins every night. That's, you know, interesting. Brad Marchand obviously came back as everybody did with a big game on Thursday. But that was really kind of the one thing, other than, you know, the complete domination by Washington that jumped out of that game, is that Brad Marchand beat the tar out of Lars Eller in that third period.
No problem with that whatsoever. This game is about accountability. It's about honesty. When you're going to celebrate on the seventh goal in front of the Bruins bench, Beware.
Were you surprised it was Brad Marchand, though? I mean, that because
yes,
because I was.
Yeah, and you know what? Lars Eller's a big guy. Lars Eller, he's one of those guys that goes into scrums and he smiles. And, you know, somebody wants to knock the smile off his face, but he gives you the smile. Somebody said that Marchand should have asked him to fight. He wouldn't have fought. Marchand gave him no choice. He gave him no choice. And we're biased. I get it. I had no problem with it. No problem with it. And, you know, you listen to some guys that I was curious to see what the reaction would be from some of the talking heads up in Canada and whatever, and some of the older school guys, no problem with it. You know, take out who did it. Take out Marchand for a second.
And the fact that he's, a hated guy.
And just take what happened and why it happened. And people that have played the game and know, I'm not going to call it the code, but just know how things are done. He did it the right way. I had no problem with it, and I'm sure that somebody from Washington's going to take it upon themselves to try to make up for it. There's no question about it, and they should. And they should. That's the way things are done.
Right. That's the way it's supposed to go. Right?
You know. There's accountability there. Lars Eller's not a guy that's accountable for some of the things that he does out there. I'm not saying he's a dirty player or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, he kind of gets under your skin a little bit and then won't do anything about it. You know, that's his reputation. That's who he is. We saw him a lot when he played for Montreal and what he does there. So no, he wouldn't have answered for it. Marchand gave him no choice. And it wasn't like he sucker punched him. He went up. He dropped the gloves, and he forced Eller to fight. And Eller didn't get sucker punched. No, don't compare it to Max Domi. Somebody tried to compare it to Max Domi. That's silly.
They were squared up, and yeah.
You know,
Eller had every chance to defend himself.
Absolutely. He gave him no choice, and that's the way he should have done it. He did it the right way.
And the rules essentially are there to take care of Marchand.
I'm just glad it wasn't under 5 minutes. If it was under 5 minutes,
then he
would have gotten suspended.
Doesn't Sweeney get hit for that too?
No, I think the coach does, actually.
The coach does.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was with six. And the first thing I did was look at the clock when that happened, because he's going to get instigator. And I looked at the clock. It was 6 minutes and something. So
6:06.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, we talked about it when it was happening. I had no problem. And then what does he do the next night? Four helpers.
Yep.
Marchand, you know, and you don't think that, for whatever reason, we don't know why the team wasn't ready to play against Washington. And if that helped fire them up, I don't know, but it got them going.
Well, if nothing else,
something got them going.
Look, I think we all agree, like the old school India says, well, something needed to be done there, whether it be because Eller is, you know, showboating a little bit, or whether it's just a kind of kick everybody in the butt and wake everybody. Like, something needed to be done. It's just that you don't expect a player of the caliber of Marchand necessarily to be the guy who has to handle something like that. But I also understand this isn't 10 years ago, and you don't have a guy who's seated at the end of the bench waiting to do that.
It's not like, you know, you went up to a small guy on the ice and started beating the crap out of him. Lars Eller's 6 foot.
Well,
two.
Well, no, a small guy went and beat up Lars Eller.
I mean, not like a tiny guy. That like
Marchand's giving up a pretty good amount of size in that
smoked
fight.
Him.
So yeah, I mean, I certainly don't have a problem with it from that vantage point. Jay in the car, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You know, I was going to start off by saying Marchand was giving up 5-6 inches of like 30-40 pounds or something stupid like that. So I mean, pick up for yourself, dude. And you can't go by, I don't care what team it is, you cannot skate by a bench winning on your seventh goal and not expect something to happen. That was just asinine completely. And as for Rusty, the Philly fan, he hates Marchand. If he was a Flyer, he'd love Marchand, and he knows it.
Flyers have had some guys like that over the years.
Marchie would be a god in Philadelphia. Are you kidding me? They'd be building statues to him.
I saw a couple people say, well, you know, if you don't want to get taunted on the seventh goal, don't allow seven goals. Yeah, I get that. But there's, hey, if you do it, you're going to be held accountable.
Right.
You want to celebrate a little bit extra coming by the bench? You should be held accountable. And that's all there was to that. And now I fully expect, you know, the other side of it to drop the next time they play.
Well, and yeah, you said that. I mean, yeah, you expect, you know, the Capitals take note of that and say, okay, well, we, you know, next time we see Boston.
There's a big thing going on right now up in Canada. Eric Gudbranson, he's like big defenseman for
Vancouver.
In fact, he had a big hit on somebody last year. I think it was Toronto or somebody. I can't remember who it was behind the net. And Tim Schaller came and fought him right away, right? And Schaller was, you know, you could have hit, you know, gotten hit by somebody a little smaller. But Gabranson flattened this guy from Calgary, this rookie player, Dubé. I don't know if that's how you say his name. Dubé. I don't know. D-U-B-E.
Tell you when we play.
Anyhow, it was an interference call. You know, he hit him before the puck was there, and he leveled him. He killed him. And Travis Hamonic jumped in and fought Gabranson, was giving away a lot of size. And Hamonic is now going to miss some time. He broke his jaw in a fight with Gabranson. So they're playing again tonight. And Calgary's dressing Dalton Prout. just the name, right?
Yeah.
He's had some big battles with Lucic over the years. He's a big, tough, physical defenseman. You know, so be accountable.
Sure.
And Gabranson fought Hamonic, and I'm sure Gabranson is going to do what he has to here today. I would imagine. I would guess. I see him as a pretty stand-up guy when he plays, so my guess is that he would, but that's the way it goes.
But you know what? That's part of – look, obviously the NHL has made taken a number of steps here over the past few years, and not even necessarily the league, but teams are kind of moving away from all of this stuff and getting rid of.
But there has to be some accountability.
Getting rid of the guy.
That's why it's there,
right? But this is part of what a lot of us love about the game is that look, you don't need the league to step in and get on Lars Eller because it can be handled in the moment.
It's the way it should be handled.
You know what? And the teams can settle it amongst themselves. Like that's always been part of the game, and it always should be. You know, it's you don't need prearranged fights and guys, you know, talking to each other before the game and say, "Hey, are we going to go tonight?" But there are times during the course of the game where
pretty much just gone.
It needs to be handled.
If you see a prearranged thing, it's because something happened the game before.
Right.
Now I'm saying, you know, if you're saying, why are those two guys going at it? And then you find out, oh, you know, game before or last season.
Right, this guy took a run at somebody, we have to get this out of our system at the start of the game.
Changes
right?
A lot of the storylines during the cross, you know, across a season, whether it's these two teams or some other teams that Bob alluded to in the Canucks and the Calgary Flames. But these will impact the storylines for all these teams across the 82 games.
John is in Natick. John, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey guys, great show. I listen every week. In regards to the Marchand show, Marchand fight, I didn't see the initial play. I didn't see Eller go by the bench, but I saw Eller go by the bench after he got lost that fight. And I don't know why the media didn't show that. And, you know, I just, no one talks about it, so maybe you guys can.
What exactly are you talking about when he, like, after the fight, Eller's bleeding and what happened?
The taunting part. I didn't see Eller.
The taunting part came after the goal.
Yeah.
Okay. So
after the goal was scored. After he scored the seventh goal to make it 7-0, he kind of went by the bench with a little extra.
Yeah, there was no taunting from Eller after the fight.
And here's the other part of that, Ryan. You know, if I'm Lars Eller, all right, I score and I do my thing, and then they show Eller jawing with the bench. Okay?
Mm.
So you know what's being said from the bench. You know, obviously the taunt, but, you know, next shift, we're coming after you.
Right.
So why is he getting jumped?
Right.
He has to know that he's going to be a target the next shift. Like, that's my point. You know, he'll do all that, and then he won't. But that's why Marchand couldn't give him a choice.
Well, you can take the boy out of Montreal. But
Well, and Bob pointed out that Todd Reirden, because the Capitals went on the power play, who was he going to throw out there? And he didn't heighten the moment there. He put his checkers out there. He put his third and fourth line guys out there to work on the man advantage to defuse the moment.
Yeah, that was I think part of that was his point was he wasn't going to. It's 7-0. We don't need to put.
You don't need to,
don't need
to
put the top power play unit out there. So I think that was a coach respect type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if that was to diffuse the situation because I don't. There weren't really any.
Well, I think he understands. You know, hey, we've already drawn the Bruins' ire here.
Yeah, right.
This player has on my bench.
Yeah,
there's no reason.
I was
to take
going
it any
more
further.
From a coach's respect point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And who was saying, actually, it was a story from Doug McClain, who was coaching the Florida Panthers years ago, and they were getting blown out by the Tampa Bay Lightning, and Terry Crist put his number one power play unit out there, and he just was, he blew up at it, you know, and he's kind of, he said it's not the same thing. He's kind of relating the story, as, you know, we're kind of taunting you. Hey, Bill Belichick did it, right? When they blow out teams, they just keep bringing out their top unit.
Yeah, sometimes you just keep playing, right? Yeah. All right, we will continue, and we'll be joined by Joe Haggerty coming up on the other side. Sports Hub headlines here with Sean Silver, and then another half hour to go on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston,
Chuck Sarai,
Bob Beers, the home of the bees, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 the Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, and Bob Beers, and joined now on the phone as well by Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston's Bruins insider. What's up, Hags?
Morning, gentlemen. How's everybody?
Well, not too bad. As we take stock of the first couple of games, we've talked to, you know, the bad of Washington and the good of the Buffalo game. What did you learn, if anything, over the first couple of games?
Well, when there are two extremes like that, I think it's hard to, you know, learn a lot of lessons one way or the other. I'm prone to believe that, obviously, that opening night loss to Washington was much more aberrational than the 4-0 win over the Buffalo Sabres, and the team that we saw against Buffalo was much more like the team that we saw last year. So, you know, given the unorthodox training camp, given that, you know, Bergeron hadn't played at all before getting dropped into that game against Washington, given that they've lost 13 in a row to that Capitals team, and it's just not a good matchup for them, clearly, you know, given all of that stuff mixed in, I think we've learned that, you know, the team is what we thought they were going to be after looking against Buffalo, but, like, we're only two games in, so you definitely would want to see a lot more. I mean, there's individual things I like. I certainly loved Brad Marchand's show of leadership at the end of that Washington game, deciding he didn't like what he saw to Lars Eller. And with a guy like Marchand, you know, if he sticks his neck out and does something like that, he's always risking, you know, getting in trouble with the league or risking, you know, much higher scrutiny. But I think, you know, that was the kind of attitude and fire and emotion that the rest of the team needed to see. And I think it carried over into Buffalo. Certainly didn't for him in the way that he played. You like that. I really liked Ryan Donato's finish in that game against Buffalo. And if he can do that when he gets those good offensive chances, they're going to be in really good shape. Obviously, Halak in both games played it very well, and that's a bright spot. And if he could get hot early, especially if Tuukka kind of struggles out of the gate a little bit like he did last year, I think that would be really beneficial for them. So, you know, two games in, I think there's a couple individual things you liked, and you hope it's much more efforts like the Buffalo one, but we'll have to play a few more games before you see that play out and know that that's for sure.
Torrey Krug goes down in the last preseason game and, you know, is going to be wearing a boot, sounds like, for a few weeks. What do we know about the injury, and how significant is that going to be here in the first month of the season?
Yeah, they say it's unrelated to the other ankle injury that ended his year in the playoffs. They're going to reevaluate after 3 weeks. Presumably he might get out of the boot at that point. Even Torrey, when you talk to him, was pretty realistic that, you know, he's not going to be right back after 3 weeks, even if it heals up and is, you know, in great shape. He's going to need time to work his way back in as well and, you know, get up to speed with what everything else that's going on after missing, you know, close to a month. So, yeah, I think it's going to be longer than 3 weeks. You hope a couple of problems in the same area that it doesn't become an issue where he starts having, you know, problems with that left ankle and left foot. Hopefully he heals from this and has no issues moving forward. But, you know, in the meantime, you've got to find ways to generate things on the power play without him at the power play quarterback position and you know, try to get as much puck moving and transition attack ability as you have without, you know, missing your best offensive defenseman. It's a tall order, obviously, but, you know, they're trying to do it with John Moore playing in his space with Brandon Carlo in that second pairing and Matt Grzelcyk, you know, on the power play and Charlie McAvoy at times too. So we'll see how that goes, but I don't think there's any one person on that roster that's going to replace the offense and the pop that Krug gives you when it comes to creating offense.
Obviously, early, only two games in, but you mentioned John Moore. There's been, you know, a few other new faces in the lineup, or you know, maybe even guys that we know but haven't seen that much of in a Boston Bruins uniform. What have you thought of Moore so far, or Nordstrom, or guys like that that are, you know, just getting their first opportunity here with the Bruins?
Yeah, it's tough when the first game you basically throw out and you don't take anything from it, right? You know, Halak, I think, is the new guy that's made the biggest first impression on me. And, you know, he came in, kind of stabilized things against Washington and played pretty well in what's always a tough situation. Was excellent against Buffalo, especially early when it was a 0-0 game. The Bruins are coming off the heels of an embarrassing blowout loss, and maybe, you know, if a bad thing or two happens to them early in that game, it could snowball a little bit. That didn't happen. You know, he stops a couple of chances early. David Pastrnak makes that great play to leap and on the back check and poke a puck away and stop a transition for Buffalo, and then they're off and running. And, you know, so Halak, I think, is the easy guy to look at and say that he's the new guy that's made the most impact. I've noticed Chris Wagner throw the body a few times. Nordstrom, I think, has been okay, not incredibly noticeable, even though I think he had some shots on net in that last game against Buffalo. And John Moore, I think, has been okay. You know, I think he's a guy that, as he gets more and more comfortable with who he's playing with the way that the Bruins play and his new situation, you know, we're probably going to notice him a little bit more over time. And, you know, I don't know that he's ever going to be the flashiest player in the world anyway. But, you know, I think they've all been okay, but Halak has certainly been the best of the bunch.
Ryan Donato, we saw him get bumped around a little bit. He gets the power play goal against Buffalo in the only power play that the Bruins had all night. I mean, he looks like he could be a significant weapon on that first power play unit. But when it's 5-on-5, where do you think his best spot is right now?
I would put him with David Krejci on the right side with Krejci and DeBrusk, and I would put him in a position where he's going to get offensive chances and he can finish. You know, that's what he's best at, is shooting, finishing off plays, not being afraid to shoot the puck, being really aggressive offensively, and you know, cashing in on those chances that he's set up with. And, you know, obviously there's some challenges playing on his offside and you know, playing against better players in the top six role, and you know, he's going to have to really work on the other parts of his game and when he doesn't have the puck to make sure he can stay there. And I think there's no secret about that. I think that's something Bruce Cassidy said over and over again, that, you know, Donato's got some things to learn, but it's hard to shy away from a kid with the offensive abilities and the ability to score goals like he's proven to have even at the NHL level. So, you know, if I were the Bruins, I'd certainly keep him where he is on that first power play unit. I'd put him with David Krejci. And I'd hope that he, you know, becomes a 20-25 goal scorer and really is able to finish off enough chances to really be one of your best goal scorers on the team. And, you know, I did season predictions and you know, the bold predictions I put in there that I think Donato could have a chance at the Calder if he's put in the right situations and he can score goals and produce offense. And, you know, if he's put in a top six spot with the Bruins and he's on the first power play unit, he's certainly going to get those chances. And I think he gets those chances, he's going to finish and he's going to put up numbers. So, you know, I hope that he stays there, but, like, we'll see. It's once again, this is an area where Bruce Cassidy hasn't shied away from saying that, you know, he's probably going to swing back and forth on that second line between Ryan Donato and Dan Heinen and maybe even Anders Bjork until he finds somebody that can really just grasp that job and not let go of it and, you know, decide it's theirs. And I don't think anybody's done that yet. So, you know, it could be a little bit of a musical chair situation with that spot in the early going.
We were talking a little earlier about some of the, you know, all the shuffling of players that's going to happen here, especially early on in the season as they mix and match and try and find the right combinations. third and fourth lines, what ideally do you think they look like?
Yeah, the third line's a tough one because I don't think Sean Corrali's a third line center. You know, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, he's had good chemistry with David Backes in the playoffs, especially against Ottawa a couple of years ago. And, you know, you like putting a couple of big bodies that are go north-south together, and you could see the potential they might have on the line together. But I just don't know that even if he's got Ryan Donato on one side and David Backes on the other, I don't know that he's going to be able to help generate enough offense to really justify being in a spot where in the NHL these days you need to get offense out of your third line, and they need to be very viable at both ends of the ice. What I think might happen is Corrali stays there for a while. You know, they see if he can do it. Maybe the offense isn't what they need it to be. And then you dip down into Providence once JFK or Trent Frederick or one of those guys is, you know, had enough experience and got enough playing time to maybe be ready to come back to the NHL. With Frederick, he had a really good camp. Maybe it wouldn't take that long, but I think the Bruins would probably feel more comfortable about him going to Providence and kind of, you know, learning a few more lessons and getting a little bit more development time before they throw him into that kind of a situation. But, you know, other than Corrali right now on that NHL roster, unless you're going to slide Backes over and he's going to be the center on that third line, I don't know that you necessarily have a better option as far as a guy offensively. I think those guys are either in Providence or somewhere down the line outside the organization. But, you know, give Corrali a chance. We'll see what happens and how it looks on the third line for a while, I think, before they make a move. But my hunch is that eventually we see one of the kids from Providence there.
All right, Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joining us. Appreciate the time as always.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
All right. As we have a few minutes to go here, guys, as we kind of look over those first couple of games, I'll ask you a couple of the questions we threw out there for Haggerty. We haven't really talked much at all this morning about the Torrey Krug injury, but, you know, coming into the season, so much was made of, you know, Bruins' depth NHL defensive-wise, and, you know, they're going to, you know, up until the trade of McQuaid, they had 8 NHL-ready defensemen, then it was 7 NHL-ready defensemen. Now it's, you know, now they lose him along the way, and you enter the season, and now it's like the depth isn't...
You still have 7. I mean, they sent Fakanainen down. You still have Steve Kampfer, right-hand defenseman, NHL defenseman. I mean, so they have 7.
I mean,
right,
I don't know that, you know... look, we don't know, honestly, because we haven't seen them yet this season, but I don't think you look at those and say that would have been ideal plan going into opening night was to have either one of those guys in the lineup.
No, it wasn't, obviously, but I mean, that's why you have your depth when you can slot somebody in like that. Like Matt Grzelcyk might have been the odd guy out to start the season. We don't know, probably would have been based on the pairs and practice prior to Torrey Krug's injury. When you lose a guy like Krug, and you know, we talked about it a little bit, you know, whether you want to say he was playing on the second pair or third pair, I think they're kind of interchangeable right now, those bottom four defensemen. But when you lose him, the power play and the offensive and the competitiveness, really, you know, that's the stuff that you lose, his character and the way that he plays. Power play wise for Matt Grzelcyk, you know, biggest challenge for him is to, you know, not to defer, you know, play, you know, Torrey Krug can, when I say defer, not to say, all right, I've got an open shot, I got to take it here. You know, they want him to be mobile. They want him to move. Brad Marchand's not the prototypical half wall guy, so they'll move him around. Torrey Krug would go onto that half wall a lot of times, and that would bring Pasternak up to the top, you know, and get shots through from there. There's a lot of moving parts with the power play, and they want him to use that mobility, which is one of his best assets. Talking about Matt Grzelcyk, you know, to be able to do those types of things. Now, you're not going to replace, I mean, Krug's a guy, he's a proven guy in terms of points and what he can do on the power play and how he can generate it. Getting up the ice, the entries into the zone, that type of thing, and then what you do once you're in there. And for Matt Grzelcyk, you know, that'll be the challenge. And, you know, he's got the potential to kind of blossom into that type of player. I don't know if he'll ever get as many points as Krug, but he's got the potential to you know, take his place for a little while right now. And, you know, when Krug gets back, they seamlessly make that transition. But, you know, I think that's his biggest challenge right now. And when they do get the power plays, we didn't see a lot of it. Like I said, nobody was good in game one, so don't even look at that. But in game two, he only had the one power play, and that was the goal by Ryan Donato on the beautiful passing play. So We really haven't seen it yet, but we'll get a good look at it here moving forward.
And let's see how Charlie McAvoy adjusts. He's not going to be asked to be the quarterback necessarily the way a guy like Torrey Krug would be if he were healthy and manning that number one power play unit. But does Charlie shoot the puck a little bit more? They've asked him to be a little bit more mobile on the blue line, to move around, to change the angles, and then distribute the puck. And to get to a guy like Matt Grizzlick, that second power play unit's going to work through David Krejci. So he's got to be able to distribute the puck to the open guy, but ultimately it's going to work its way over to Krejci, who will direct traffic.
Well, and we've talked about, I think, last year with McAvoy, he seems to have a knack for getting the puck through, too. Like, I thought
he was able to do that, especially in college, and then he went over to World Championships last year and played a lot of power play for Team USA. It's still a part of his game that's evolving. It's not quite there yet. And the reason they don't put McAvoy on the Bergeron unit, they want that left shot out high on the Bergeron unit. And because, like I was just saying, he's going to move down onto that right wing half wall. And teams will do it different ways, but the way that the Bruins configure it, they want the left shot there. So his ability to move and make those plays, and then McAvoy plays the other power play unit. You know, I guess we can call them first or second units. We'll call Bergeron and Krejci units. But and there's different ways to do it, but the way that they want to do it, at least for right now, Grizzlick's the best fit on that Bergeron unit.
All right, coming up this week, Ottawa, the 1 o'clock game on Monday for the home opener. Again, don't forget, by the way, because we had Bob Sweeney on earlier, bostonbruins.com/5050 to get your 50-50 raffle tickets for that. A minimum guaranteed prize of $125,000 if you win that. So get on there and get your tickets. They'll be selling them. They're selling them right now all the way through the second intermission of the game on Monday. But you got Ottawa coming in here on Monday, a couple of days off, and then Edmonton's here on Thursday night, and then Detroit on Saturday. Obviously, there's a couple of really winnable games in there, if not all three right now. So you get a good schedule here to open things up and a nice long homestand before they hit the road. What are you hoping to see out of this team, not only Monday, but as this week goes on? What should we be looking for?
You come home, you get a couple practices, you know, you put the first two games of the season behind you, you realize the way you need to play in order to win, you realize the way you play in order to be successful. If you play the way you do against Buffalo, you know, more often than not, you come out with a W, right? I mean, that's sometimes the bounces might not go your way, but that's kind of a blueprint of what you need and how you want to play. And that's the approach they have to take. Don't look at on paper, you know, this is a winnable game. No. If you're not ready to play, you lose. I mean, that's the reality of it. So Ottawa's going to come in here, and on paper, that should be a win every time you play them this season. You know, just reality.
They're in
right?
the middle of tearing it down to the studs.
Edmonton is. I'm curious, and Detroit's kind of a similar thing. You know, they're a team in transition. Edmonton's kind of a wild card, a playoff team 2 years ago. Last year, they couldn't get it going. Edmonton is right now. They're playing a game today in where is it?
Sweden.
They're playing in Sweden right now, and this is the regular season. They're playing over in Sweden. Their next game is against Boston on Thursday. Yeah. So I don't know what they're going to look like when they come in. You know, to play the Bruins on Thursday. Who knows? But this. And it's so early, it's hard to tell anyhow. But, yeah, you've got some winnable games, like you said, Ryan, on paper. But if you approach it that way, if you're the Bruins and you don't come out, you know, with your A game or at least your A effort, you know, it's not going to happen. And now you're right back to square one.
And with the Edmonton Oilers in particular, I'm sure we're going to talk about this a lot across the regular season. Sometimes it's not who you play, but when you play them. Let's see if the Bruins can take advantage of an Edmonton Oilers team that'll be playing its first game in North America.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We are back with you again next Saturday at 9 a.m. Hope you'll be here as well.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.